Welcome to Licking the Bowl, the story of an appetite with recipes. I'm Erica Lutz, recording from a secret, undisclosed location. Licking the Bowl is a forthcoming book. It's this podcast. It's a memoir with recipes. It's the story of a life recreated. It's my new thing with chickens. Episode 18, vanilla, sex, coffee. Yeah, there's sex. So that's your trigger warning if you're squeamish or related to me. It's a cold snap. Lots of cold, little snow. Down at Fort Chicken, it's in the low 20s every night. The chickens have no insulation or heat in their chicken house, which by design has a lot of natural ventilation. So the thing to do is not to heat the house. They will adjust to the cold. I do go down every night and move the chickens around to make sure they're all on one perch, fluffed out, keeping each other warm. I bring hot water every morning to thaw their water dispensers. They get extra protein. They're cold, but they're surviving. They adjust to extremes. We all do. Food, like the river you can never step into twice, is always changing. The food tastes the same and different every time you make the recipe. It's like memory. A memory is the same and different every time you remember it. And so too with story. Every time you tell a story, the story changes too. It changes in how you tell it based on the audience. But it changes for the storyteller. The stories you tell transform from memory into fiction. The story of Bill changes as I touch it. It's the same dish, but the flavors seem different today. Oh, Bill. His vivid blue eyes, his strong opinions, his passion for justice. For years after Bill dies at the end of 2008, I can't tolerate the smell of vanilla from Madagascar. I become nauseated, dizzy. My heart pounds and I'm thrust back to the markets of Antananarivo, tables piled high with bundles of vanilla beans. For most of our 22 years together, our relationship is so good. We spend almost all our time together, and we don't get sick of each other. We laugh every day. We play games together, backgammon and cards, gin rummy. And we work in the same office space. We travel the world together. We camp and we hike. We edit each other's writing. We cook together. We tell each other almost everything. Almost everything. We get tattooed together. We raise the kids together. And sometimes we lie in bed and cuddle, and he says to me, "I don't know how I got so lucky as to have you, to have this, our life together." And I say, "I know, and I mean it, and it's true." Yeah, there's a rough patch, it's a long one, but we get through it. And for years, we've been best friends, supporters, and the best parents together ever. But it's 2008, and it isn't good for me anymore. When you love somebody and they really want to do something, you support them in that, right? But I can't do enough. Everything I do is wrong. Mostly, I will never be able to love him enough. So when Bill goes to Madagascar for 8 months a year, and I stay home in Oakland, our relationship becomes an open relationship. You're listening to Licking the Bowl, the story of an appetite. This is Erica, and now it gets a little bit racy. Feral Boy is short and virile, covered with tattoos, 8 years younger than me, and kind of an asshole. I know his nickname, but not his real name. I know he plays the ukulele. I know he's a single father. I know he keeps parrots and a pit bull. He tells me he's a sex educator. But he probably just says that so I'll be confident he's drug and disease free and will bring the condoms. I don't know his phone number, and his email address has been created just for me. Feral Boy comes from the Craigslist miscellaneous romance section, notorious for married people dreaming about a little something on the side. His ad is titled, "Not Your Boyfriend." He's perfect for a woman with a husband out of the country for many months, perfect for a woman with a free pass. He arrives on his motorcycle, a borrowed Harley, at 9 a.m. after Annie is off to high school for the day, and I make him a strong cup of Pete's coffee. And then we have sex. There is a shower. There's a hot tub. There is a futon. We do it all. Well, we do a lot. Feral Boy tells me that he wants to turn me over his knee and spank me until I cry and come. No, I'm not ready for that. It's a matter of trust. He's not my boyfriend. He's not my husband. So we continue to have hot, vanilla sex. We're very compatible. It's everything I've always craved. So for a couple of months, every week or so, here comes Feral Boy. Sometimes when he's just too overwhelmed by his life, he lies on top of me for hours talking. Once he simply lies down on top of me and, exhausted by life, takes a nap. And then Annie and I go to Madagascar to visit Bill. After Bill dies, I realize how easy it would be to float off the planet. I understand why, when an old married person dies, so often the spouse dies really soon. It's so hard to stay here. So I try for some grief-stricken promiscuity because, if not now, when? Don't judge. Some people need time, years, forever, to be alone after losing their life partner. I need to be held. And I have Feral Boy. 4 days after Bill dies, I write Feral Boy an email. "I have a favor to ask you. I need to be held. That's not a euphemism for sex, even. I just want to lie down with you. And I know it's not at all what you signed up for here, comfort for a grieving widow. But if you could do that, dot, dot, dot." He writes back, "Holy shit, Erica. I'll do what I can for you, of course. I'm completely unavailable Monday or Tuesday." Thursday, he shows up on his motorcycle. "So, how are you? I mean, besides the obvious." There is nothing besides the obvious. I make him a cup of Black Pete's coffee. After he holds me all day, no sex, he's having, he tells me, an ejaculation-free January, whatever that is, I'm back on the planet. A couple of weeks later, Feral Boy dumps me. He's nice enough to do it in person. We stand awkwardly in the living room. He has a ukulele strapped to his back. "I'm too needy," he says. "I never give him a chance to crave me." And of course I am needy. And it's true. This isn't what he's signed up for. Here's a recipe for vanilla milk pork tenderloin, tender and fragrant. And of course, it's on the website, lickingthebowl.com. Bill created this dish one cold winter night. Serve it with boiled yellowfin potatoes and salad or any other mild sides. The vanilla flavor permeates and sings in your mouth. 1.5 pounds of pork tenderloin, 6 shallots, 1 tablespoon of butter, 1 tablespoon of canola oil, salt and pepper, 1.5 cups of whole milk. Oh gosh, you could even use cream. And 1 teaspoon of vanilla. In a Dutch oven, saute the diced shallots in oil and butter until they're translucent. Don't let them burn. Add and brown the tenderloin. Salt and pepper. Add milk and let it bubble both covered and uncovered for 30 to 35 minutes, turning the meat occasionally until it's tender. Remove the meat. Reduce the sauce on a medium heat until it's brown. Add the vanilla. Slice the meat and serve it with sauce on top or on the side. Years later, Dan and I call our house the Eureka, and it's located 1 mile down an unnamed private road at the edge of a rural county in Northern California's Sierra Nevada foothills. Every morning in this forest halfway up the mountain, in our secret undisclosed location, we make coffee in a French press pot. We get our coffee at Pete's in Sacramento, 1 pound at a time, half Major Dickinson and half decaf Arabian Mocha Java. Every morning, we lie in bed and decide who's going downstairs to build a fire in the wood stove and make the coffee. Usually it's Dan, but let's say it's me this morning. I grab my robe and slippers from the closet, then go downstairs into the silent forest house. I put on the kettle and measure 4 heaping spoonfuls into the stainless steel Bodum French press. Then, while the water heats, I rekindle last night's blaze from the coals, the way Dan the woodman taught me, kindling and pine. When the water's boiled, I call up the open stairwell, 4 minutes, and pour boiling water into the pot, stir to settle the grounds. I take 2 coffee cups from the cupboard and I preheat Dan's. The fire has caught. I push in the flue and add 1 log of oak from the bee tree that fell down in last year's storm. 6 cords of wood we cut, split, stacked last summer. Coffee. I press and I pour. Dan likes his coffee with 1/4 teaspoon of brown sugar and 1/2 and 1/2, and he likes his second cup zapped in the microwave for 22 seconds. Bill liked his coffee in a giant cup with 5 spoonfuls of white sugar and 1/2 and 1/2, and he let it cool until he could gulp it all down in 1 swig. When Bill died, I realized I didn't know how I liked my coffee, or even if I did. But I know now. I like my coffee just like Feral Boy did. Hot, black, and strong. Dan joins me on the couch in front of the wood stove. The sky is just getting light through the trees. We sit in our bathrobes, our cups on the coffee table in front of us. Oso, the giant schnoodle, and Momo, the teenage cat, wait not far from us. Our eyes meet. Dan taps his knee, and I move towards him. It's a matter of trust. Rain turns the driveway into a rushing creek bed. Down at the corner of the access road, the seasonal creek throbs, churns, and crests the culvert, flooding the road. Licking the Bowl is a Bear Clover Productions production. Licking the Bowl, sometimes it's literal, sometimes it's metaphorical. always, it's delicious.